Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Mon.
And welcome back to Masters of Modern. I am your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
What's up, man? How you doing? We're back. We got so much to talk about. You know, it's weird. In the old days when we would do this show, it was consistent. It was week to week.
The old days.
We would have one time we would record here in the studio.
We had like a studio at one point.
Yeah, I didn't see you like every day. So like it was like I would see Alex once a week to work on the show. And we would now it feels like we're in this like whirlpool, and it's like we find a minute to record when we can. I feel like I don't even know what our schedule is.
Actually, we've been consistently recording at 9 a.m. every Tuesday.
All right, fair enough.
If you want to pick like a schedule, we've actually pulled that off pretty consistently.
Well, never mind. Forget my story then.
Pacific Standard Time.
Yeah, well, it doesn't feel that way. But
yeah.
I think you're right, though.
For like, I think the last 3 weeks we've recorded at the exact same time, which is actually really impressive on our part.
Strong.
Everyone should be very proud of us.
Yeah. also, guys, if you were going to be at Comic-Con this weekend, are you going to be at Comic-Con
weekend? I'm definitely going to be at Comic-Con.
I was asking them.
Oh.
They can't respond because it's a podcast. I hope you guys are going
to
be at Comic-Con.
I'm excited to go.
I'm super excited. Guys, it's going to be a great weekend. Lots of work, of course, but there's parties, there's daytime things, there if you're around.
Shout out at us, we will be there.
Yeah, tweet at us. I would love to meet some people and hang out and do the whole thing. So Comic-Con, this weekend.
Speaking of that, have you seen the tokens? The promos for Comic-Con?
Yes, I did a little review on Anchor.
What's your thought on them?
Of the Planeswalkers?
Yeah.
I think they're fine. I think I'm trying to remember exactly. The one that I'm most excited for is that there's a cool alternate art blue-green Nyssa. I was like pretty pumped for that one.
Okay.
I think the most powerful one, if I remember correctly, is the good Chandra, right? That's the chase card.
And Gideon. Both of those are
the
like
trials, right?
Modern playable staples now.
I didn't think it was that impressive of a selection this year. I also thought the art was like, eh.
That's my issue. So first off, for those who don't know, we go to Comic-Con every year. And then I, with Jimmy and Josh Lee Kwai, our sister podcast co-hosts on the Command Zone, or hosts of the Command Zone, would camp out for the SDCC promos, San Diego Comic-Con Magic promos.
Because if you guys don't know what's going on with this, they're not crazy expensive until after. You can buy them at like a retail price of like $150 or $170 for the set.
$110?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Or yeah. $120, depending on if there's a big sword or not.
Yeah, and you get like a cool thing, and you get to take them home, and it's just retail price. But there's limited numbers, and you have to get a ticket to do it. It's only
after
the fact
they
double.
So the way it works is, to explain how it works, is you have to get in a line at midnight, or at some time the night before. Midnight sometimes is like a little late. So like between 9 and midnight, get in line out in front on the grass. Stay there overnight. Then that line then moves forward, and that's the line for everyone to get in early, other than the people that want to get in a place called Hall H, which is where every major movie studio does their announcements and stuff. But
right.
This is the secondary line that gets into the main hall. You then have to run at 6 o'clock in the morning all the way to the opposite side of the San Diego Convention Hall to where the ticket line is, to wait in line for the Hasbro ticket line. Then you wait in that line for 2 hours. Then that line moves up. You get a ticket. And then that line then goes to a secondary line that's more just a line to be able to get. If your ticket is early enough, you can then use that line to get into the main hall. And then you can get on the Hasbro line. There you use your ticket to then buy up to two per person is able to buy one of these Comic-Con exclusives.
Do you guys all buy two because you have someone who wants you to buy one for them?
Oh, I want play sets, so I would buy two. And then at times we'd like figured out how to like.
So if
do
I was
it multiple days in a row.
So if I was to ask you to pick me up one, no.
Well, so A, I'm not doing it this year. So that's the point. Last year we didn't do it because I didn't love the zombie ones, and then this year kind of a similar situation where I don't love the art on this one. That's kind of the big one. I really liked the black one. I know a lot of people don't like the full black. It's really hard to read.
Those are the coolest defense, ones
but
ever.
They're so cool and different.
And there's a Vryn's Prodigy in there.
Yeah,
which is like,
I have two of those.
Of all the ones ever, is that far and away the best
one? The first set is the most expensive still, because the very first year they did it, they had no idea what they were getting into, and so they underprinted, and they allowed anyone who bought to buy as many as they wanted.
So they sold out immediately.
So they sold out before day one was
What
done.
Was the original set?
It was...
The lower one five or no?
No. It was three mana Ajani.
Okay.
Four mana Chandra, the first good four mana Chandra.
Gotcha.
I believe it's five mana Mill Jace, the zero, like wrecks people in limited Jace.
Yeah.
Four mana Liliana, that is weird, the one that like is swamp themed.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then I believe it's red, green. It's a Garrick. It's five mana Garrick. I think it's five. Oh, no, it's six mana Garrick.
Okay.
It's six mana, like...
Draw cards equal to the creature, or is that the 5-mana one?
That's the 5-mana one. It's the like the one that like lets you cheat creatures in the play.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah. And that's more expensive because it's hard to find. Like for instance, I would love to get my hands on a 3-mana, the 3-mana Ajani. Like
yeah.
It's the one of all of the planeswalkers available as SDCC combo that I have in my Geist deck. It's the one that I have in the deck that I also don't have the SDCC version of it, and it bugs me to this day.
Right. yeah. I mean. That Johnny's kind of fine. It's sweet, I guess.
It's good in Geist because it gives double strike and flying to Geist, and then he hits them with an Eldrazi Conscription attached, and then they're dead.
Yeah, I mean, I play that card. The only format or deck that I've ever played that card in is in my green-white, like, all-in double strike deck from Highlander, where I'm, like, trying to basically play...
Oh, no, you very... It's not a modern card. This is a card that you're doing a dumb thing.
I mean, look, here's one thing I will say. The ability to play it on three and minus it to give something flying and double strike can just win the game out of nowhere.
Right.
Period.
Right.
And the fact that you can do it and make your opponent respond to it and then set up to do it again later in the game, again, is like, I think there's probably a deck that will use this card effectively in Mono at some point.
I've also alted it relatively often, surprisingly.
Is this the cats one?
Yeah, you get cat you get a 2/2 tokens, cat tokens equal to your life total.
Right.
That's how many tokens you get. And it's because when he's not doing the thing that's dangerous,
right.
If you're just plussing up with him, he's not scary to
people. And
people
don't work. It's just a +1/+1 counter. Yeah.
And if you don't have a creature in play or he's not doing anything, He's literally doing nothing. So people ignore him. And then you're like, oh, I alted. I have 22 twos.
This
is Commander, so people aren't as like focused on what you're doing. But like,
it's
surprising how many times I've alted with 3-mana Johnny.
Something I thought about, too, was...
He also comes out at 5.
Yeah.
Because his double strike is -3, I think. And so he comes out at 5. It's -3 to double strike. So, like,
He comes out on 4, he minuses to 1, or he pluses to 5.
Yeah, yeah, correct.
One really interesting thing, just on the subject of double strike creatures, by the way, because I was realizing this last night, that new cat-adorned pouncer is just strictly better fencing ace. It's just, like, way better.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Like,
and it's a cat.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it's not a soldier, which is worse, but it's a cat, which is better.
And they really haven't... It's interesting.
There's more soldier
lords. They really haven't pushed. They haven't pushed low CMC double strike creatures very hard. Like it's a. I think it's probably a space that's a little dangerous because like
it's like evasive hexproof creatures. You don't
because
do
pump
that.
Is so cheap. So like if you a 2-mana 1/1 with double strike is like right on the border in their mind. I think of like powerful, which is why Fencing Ace was the first time we had seen that. Right. Except no, we had seen the red white one, but the 1/2. But this is the first one where you could play it in a single color, I think.
Yeah.
So
this
then,
is the second, the third one of those. You now have three.
Yes. Well, look, I'm just telling you, the fact that he comes back as a 4/4 double strike for five after he's dead is, like, kind of insane.
Yeah.
Considering, like, a 4/4 double strike for five would already be, like, kind of good.
Sure.
Like, not modern good, but, like, that's a powerful creature.
Right.
And that's the backside of this guy. Like, I think this card's pretty good. I think this card's pretty underrated. I wouldn't be surprised if this card makes some moves at some point.
Yeah, I can see it.
Modern, probably not, but maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Colonnade's just like a 4/4 flyer. Just like is good in the late game, so that's why people like it.
True.
Yeah.
And for the same amount of Colonnade, you get it. And at 2-mana, you can play it early, and it just is like a problem.
Yeah, I mean, it's a freaking 4/4 double strike.
Is there a blue-white? Blue-black? No. I'm trying to think if there's a good like land-based pump spell. Something to give that pump that's like not... I guess in Bant, you could play Simic Charm. Is like insane with this card.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'll tell you what. That as somebody, just because I've played this in Highlander, like I know the strategy well, it's all you're doing when you do that...
Actually,
is
it's
make,
really good with the 3-mana Johnny we just talked about.
Right, no. No, because it already has double strike.
No, it comes in with 2, and then Johnny pluses on it.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, yeah. But, it's good with the bad half of a Johnny.
Yeah, he's fine. I mean, what's really interesting is that, like, and we can talk about this, actually. This is a modern relevant discussion. But so, like, Infect and Double Strike are, like, basically parallel effects, right? They're kind of the same thing in a lot of ways.
They're comparable. They push Infect more than Double Strike.
Right.
Because Infect is a very singular mechanic. It only works with other Infect cards.
Yes.
Versus Double Strike that works with every other card in Magic. So Infect cards inherently, I feel like, are more powerful for the fact that they kind of have Double Strike.
100%, yeah. Which is why the Infect deck exists and the Double Strike deck does not exist. Right. But if you...
Or now.
Yeah. But if you think about it, I mean, it's... You don't... Okay, so...
Would the Double Strike deck exist if we had a 1-1 for one Double Strike?
Maybe. Yes. Probably, actually. Yeah, I bet you it would, because the thing is, like, with Infect, like you said, it's very restrictive. Like, you have to build around this very, very specific subset of creatures, and the pump spells are great, and the pump spells work very well, but you only have a couple options for creatures you can play.
Sure.
Whereas, I think with Double Strike, you start to get into a world where, like, playing Lightning Bolt in your deck is both a kill spell and removal,
sure.
As opposed to, like, Infect, you don't really have... Like, you rarely are going to win with, like, the beat you down with Noble Hierarch plan. Like, I've seen it happen. But,
sure.
Like, it's, you have to win in this one way.
I was always sad there wasn't, you know, like, Soren's Thirst, which is 2 damage to target creature, gain 2 life,
yep.
Or our player. I was always sad we didn't get an Infect version of that card for, I feel like that was always a card that was, like, maybe too good, but also kind of sweet.
Well, it's like you're just like you're basically saying it's Boros Charm, but also kills creatures.
Boros Charm, Lightning Helix, but bad Lightning Helix.
Well, Soren's Thirst was 2 for 2, right?
Yeah, so I'm saying two for two.
So if it has Infect, if the effect has Infect, then it's 4 damage to a player.
But you only get 2 life.
Oh, sure. Okay, that's fair. All right, we're just like rambling and ranting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right,
so
subject matters of the day. Thought we wouldn't have an episode.
We're the MM Cast, guys. We're on Twitter. You can find us
there. Oh, yeah, shout-outs. Yeah, do shout-outs while I reload my computer to get all the pages I saved up. And
yeah, you can find us on Twitter, at the MM Cast.
I'm at Kess Wiley.
I'm at Ben Bateman Media. And, yeah, that's pretty much that's that. You can find our Patreon, where you can help us support the show, because that's how we pay for things and do the show. That's patreon.com/TheMMCast. And we have the sister podcast of ours, Jimmy and Josh, The Command Zone. They're on collected.company.
Yep. Make sure to check out our Patreon. It is how we buy things, do things.
Just said that. You had
cool.
A stroke.
No, I was. I told you I wasn't paying attention. Make sure to check out the Facebook group.
Yes. It's
That's
growing.
Really, yeah, like we're at 400 people, 350.
Yeah. You know what's really wild? The Facebook group for this and also the Facebook group for Action Movie Anatomy were started very close to one another within a couple weeks. And both of them are blowing my mind with, like, the number of people that are added. The Magic one's growing faster, but the
because you guys are better than your guys.
But, yeah, it's quite surprising. We started the movie one with like 25 people, and I was like, maybe we'll get like 40 people, and we have like a few hundred now, and so it's cool.
Actually, thinking about it, I would love if the Masters of Modern fans were competitive with the Action Movie and
well a
fans.
Lot of them are the same fans. There's a lot of crossover.
They're the ambassadors.
Yeah,
they're like the Russians who live in DC to communicate between the two countries.
Okay, we're just tangented so hard.
You guys are Russia. We're the Masters of Modern fans are America. All right, so anything else? Command Zone, that Facebook group.
Yeah, I mean, 10 minutes.
Make sure
magic.
To check it out. I mean, the Facebook group's really fun. Check it out. Contribute. That's where we're kind of at regularly. What's cool is that by being part of the Facebook group, you'll be alerted to posts, and they'll show up kind of in your day to day actions.
Right. I have 2 last plugs to make.
Go for it.
The first one is, I have a thing on anchor.fm called 10 Minutes of Magic. I talk about it every week. It's a short form show that I do about all magic content. Alex and I are going to be doing an episode of that show every single week from here on out. So if you guys wait every week to hear us do Masters of Modern and you want the full hour-long show, I'll tell you what, you're still going to get the hour-long show. You're also going to get an extra day of 10 minutes of content. Alex and I are going to devote 1 full day of that station to just talking Modern. So go check that out. You'll be able to find that this week for the first time. We're toying with the day that we want to do it, but I think probably Mondays will be the day that we're going to do it. It's going to be a little bit of like a weekend recap, top decks, any news. I think Monday is probably the day. We'll call it Modern Mondays. What do you think about that, Alex? just fully ignoring me again.
I think Monday is the day we do Modern Mondays. Oh, yeah. Well, though, I feel like as much as the alliteration works, if we're recording every Tuesday morning, shouldn't it be Modern Tuesdays?
Well, the great thing about Anchor is that there's the interview feature. I can just call you. And we can just record via phone call.
You're going to call me every Monday?
Yeah. So, yeah, anyway, guys, that's what you should do. You should download the app anchor.fm because you'll be able to get more modern content. And also, there's a trivia league and other things. It's really fun. So, there's that. And then the last but not least thing that I was going to plug was we are doing a brew episode next week on the show. It's for our Patreon subscribers. We have changed it now. It used to be that if you donated $5 a month, you could submit deck ideas and we would deck tech your decks. We want to now open that up to anybody who is on the Patreon at all. So if you've been donating $1 and have never submitted a deck tech, you are now able to submit deck techs. And if you want to donate $1 to our Patreon a month, you can also submit decks and we will deck tech your deck next week. We're going to be doing a full brew thing with Patreon. We're going to be taking the submissions there. So go to the Patreon, donate $1, submit a deck. We'll tech your idea on the air. It'll be a lot of fun. We've been rambling. Let's talk about Magic.
All right. So first off, Star City Games, Modern Classic Cincinnati happened. We pulled on Twitter a month ago that should we focus a little bit more on just whatever the weekly Magic tournament was and include SCG events into that, and people with a resounding yes informed us yes. So we're going to go over what the top eight was and the top cards. I also want to bring that up. We're going to maybe do a top card segment, which this one is really interesting. Number one, first place. What do you think? I already told you. So
I know. Well, but we'll do this again because it's surprising. I was going to say, can I guess some of the top eight? And you said, sure. And I was like, Fatal Push. You're like, nope. Top
cards. Yeah, no. Fatal Push wasn't even in the top eight.
I can't believe Fatal Push was not one of the eight most played cards. That blows my mind.
Part of it is I believe that Affinity dominated this tournament. So the top cards were Path to Exile, Relic of Progenitus, Lightning Bolt, Stony Silence, and then Arcbound Ravager, Ornithopter, Signal Pest, Vault Scourge, Cranial Plating, Mox Opal.
Just like lots of Affinity.
That 5 to 10 are literally the five most played cards in Affinity. The five cards that are guaranteed to be a lock of a 5/5. They all had 18.75%. And I'm assuming 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 are, you know, the other halves of Affinity that are in every Affinity list. Stony Silence number 4, which seems important. It's crazy how good Affinity is in this metagame. This is the third week in a row that it's done really well, and it hasn't really slowed down since GP Vegas.
So why do we think that Affinity is so good in this particular metagame? I think Affinity is clearly good against Shadow. That's the first thing, right?
It gets in the air, and because they're versatile and I think part of it is so much of the metagame has now leaned itself towards being able to deal with piercing strategies of Death Shadow, of being able to deal with multiple single threats.
Right.
That Affinity's ability to slide into a wide option gives it a chance.
Yeah, I also think that Affinity in its good hands comes out so fast in the first and second turns of the game that if they fire off one hand disruption spell, but most of your hand is vomited on the table by turn two, the best they're doing is 1-for-1 on you. Because at the point that you're like mostly top decking and they're just like firing off hand disruption spells 7 and 8, it's not good anymore. Like at that point they're down cards and your creatures are coming down faster and they have to spend their mana. They're super tight mana to interact with your threats.
Right. And I would even say that's, you know, the number one place was blue red Gift Storm. I would say that's also true of them. Like both Affinity and Gift Storm have that kind of in common where, and that Gift Storm won the event, is that they're combo decks, but they're combo decks in the, I forget the term we used previously for this, but, every single card works together to cause a combo to happen versus something like Splinter Twin, which was two cards caused a combo and you were doing everything you can to protect that.
Yeah.
So like Storm is how many of the same effect can I make happen? And Affinity is very similar. Now, Affinity is a that aggressive deck. I wish I remembered the term. We had like a good term for this. And then Storm is a that combo deck. But both of them are very much like Thoughtseize is bad against them to a certain extent because it doesn't
redundant,
they have every they're so redundant that every other card in the deck does it, and where Storm makes up for it is that they interact with their graveyard more, and where Affinity makes up for it is that they're so quick in dumping their hand that it's hard for really any Thoughtseize to matter.
Yeah, I mean, and ultimately, what did you say the fourth most played card was? Stony Silence.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. People are aware of the fact that Affinity is good. The best players are probably saying Affinity is the best thing against Shadow. So let's make sure that because people are going to be trying to level to us, we have lots of Stony Silences available.
I think it's also possible that just Affinity is also good against Bant Eldrazi. And the answers to Bant Eldrazi are very much not what's maybe best against Affinity. Like, those don't, I think, go hand in hand.
Right.
Yeah, so really interesting. Esper Gifts. So Gifts was in two decks in the top eight, which is really sweet. Gifts is doing really well right now. Card Titan sweet. Shift was second place. I think that deck is probably just in general underrated.
Yeah, it's a good deck.
Yep. White Red Prison and Merfolk were 9th and 10th place, and Bant Company was 11th, and then more Affinity lists.
Modern's such a sweet format. Yeah,
this is really, I mean, like, Affinity on the banned watch list, I mean, we said we'd updated everything. Mox Opal is looking more and more precarious.
Yeah, I'm still not really worried about it. I know it's a moment right now, but it's a short moment, and, like, this is what happens. There's a reason that card and that deck has been basically legal for 5 years with basically no bannings. Somehow it's thwartable. I'm not sure.
It might be just the metagame that existed then. I mean, like, Grixis is now one of the best decks in the format, though Grixis Death Shadow wasn't one even in the top eight. Where's the Grixis Death Shadow deck? 17th place is the highest Grixis Death Shadow deck.
I think that is somewhat a function of metagaming, but...
But my point is that Grixis is the worst against Affinity.
Yes.
Affinity is the best against Grixis because it doesn't have Stony Silence, it doesn't have Ancient Grudge, and it doesn't have any of the, like... Yeah, those are the two most important ones. So, like, missing those two...
Gorgon's Command's good, but it's a little slow.
It's a 3-mana, you kill one artifact. Like, that, their Affinity is built to be resistant to at least that.
Yeah.
Affinity's built to maybe win against Ancient Grudge. you're gonna beat a single call against Command.
For sure.
So that's the tournament. The other main thing we want to talk about today is Wizards made a bunch of announcements earlier this week, and it has a lot to do with the changes to in-store play and what that kind of means. And I'm going to kind of go over each of the different changes, and there's one big one that I want to go over has the kind of the internet by storm. The first big one is store championships. Though this doesn't have a lot to do with Masters of Modern, though it does a little bit in the sense that you want your store to do well, and also promos are going to exist of cool cards. And basically, they're changing game day to a store championship. And instead of having game day at the beginning of a block season, so the time between two blocks, they're now putting it at the end. So at this point, instead of having, oh, I got a standard deck, it's no longer there to encourage you to put together a standard deck. It's now there to have it so you're benefited for having gotten good with your standard deck over that season, because they're adding so many other reasons to play that format. The one cool thing is that there are multiple the promos. So previously, game day promos were from the most recent set.
Yep.
And they're full art and they're sweet. Now they're from the next set, so they're now preview promos. So you get cards early from the newest set.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Even though they're not legal with the time you get them.
I think the championship happens like... So for instance, the Ixalan Championship is December 31st.
Right.
And spoiler season starts that Monday.
So you're going to get the card a couple weeks early. It's a super early pre-release card.
Correct.
Cool.
Yep.
That's cool.
And I think the way that it works is they're full art, so it's so obvious that this card is different that you will realize it ahead of time.
Awesome.
Friday Night Magic is changing, and the big thing is that they're now, before there were seasons aligned with set releases, they're now aligned with set releases. They're originally just aligned with just months and when whatever season they decided. So I believe what it means is that whatever the promo is, and we'll get what that changes, whatever the promo is for FNM is now going to last that whole set instead of a new one every month.
Gotcha. Okay, gotcha. So, yeah, I skimmed all this stuff. It sounds like there's a lot of information. Pause. He's reading.
Read the full announcement. The first change is easy. Normally, FNM packages were mostly arbitrary and didn't always align with the latest and greatest of Magicka going on. By aligning seasons, which to players mostly indicate what promos you could receive, with the sets, we can better give players experience that are relevant. Now, this, I might be wrong on this. This is the one that I'm not totally sure on. It might still be going monthly, but instead of it being just by January, it's like it starts with the set release and then ends based on specific timings. The second one, which is more relevant, and we're going to have a bigger discussion on this in a second, is double-sided tokens are now going to be the FNM promos. They're completely getting rid of, and by completely, they made a secondary announcement because the internet freaked out about this. But they, for at least a year, are getting rid of F&M promos of standard legal cards, and they're moving towards a token.
I mean, it's a really interesting decision to because, like, let's break this down. Okay, generally speaking, tokens, the ones that you get in packs, I don't save them. Some players do. They're kind of worthless because they have, like, the back of them is, like, an advertisement. Like, they just don't feel like...
They're more useful for limited.
Yes.
Unless you, like...
They don't feel like a cool thing
you have.
There's,
like, 10 tokens that, like, you want to collect them because you, like, for instance, Elementals for Pyromancers.
Yeah.
Because those are, like, you want 30 of them sometimes.
It's, like, they're fine, and, like, you get the fringe case where there's a cool one, but for the most part, they're, like... limited, you just throw it away. Like, most people just throw them away. I don't keep them.
Sure.
Whereas...
I don't know if most people is a fair statement, but...
A lot of people. Then you move over to this promos that have been printed in Standard for, I mean, years and years and years now.
Yes.
Like, this has been going on since the player rewards stuff, like the late 90s. And, you know, there's a storied history of some of these cards, like, but what people don't remember is if you are doing, you know, one per month... 12 months a year for like 15 years, you can think of right off the bat like 12 to 20 that are like awesome, sick ones where you're like, oh my God, I'm so glad I got my Glistener Elf. Or like, it was awesome that month they gave us a bunch of, you know, modern reprints.
Lingering Souls or...
Or this Fire Ice from way back
Fatal
when.
Fatal Push is happening right now.
It's really cool to have. But then you start to look through your like binder of old crappy foils and you're like, oh man, this like... what's the blue mill curse from like Innistrad? Like Curse of the Bloody Tome or something?
Sure.
Or, you know, like that, or like, you know, Jace's Ingenuity. Like, these cards where you're just like, I don't really need a special foil of this card.
Right.
Like, I just have this stack of all these bad cards that have been printed that were supposed to be good in Standard and weren't. And, you know, it's deflating to win and be one of the four people that gets that promo. And then it's not good. It sucks.
Sure.
Like, it's sweet when you get a good one. It's really crappy if you win F&M, you know, a small handful of times in the year because you're just like kind of a cash player.
And I think this is one of the reasons they're changing. And this is why I think the season's alignment is that there's going to be one promo per set. I think it was extremely hard for them. And obviously it is, because the way, look at Standard and the banning list currently in Standard.
Right.
It's very hard for Wizards to predict exactly what cards are going to be good in Standard. They don't have a team large enough. It would be actually impossible to solve Standard themselves. And on top of that, for them to, there's like a confirmation bias problem where... They could predict it by making this strategy too good, but then that would be bad for Standard. So they like the fact that it's a little bit more open in the air and then they're missing. But because of that, you have all of the... Like, if you look at the last year, there's been four good cards, and this year has been a little bit better than last year, but for the most part, every other, if not more than that card, has been pretty bad over the last 3 years as Standard F&M promos.
Yeah, I mean, I'll bet you we could think of five. We could probably think of five that were sweet, right? Path, sweet. Serum Visions, sweet.
Well, no. Renegade Rallier, Fatal Push,
yep.
Aether Hub, Aetherworks Hub are like the three that like I think were pretty legit this year.
Yeah.
And we probably could have done more good ones. We might get good ones this summer. But I think from their perspective, they miss more than they help. And then specifically, they did data analysis. And a good F&M, Fatal Push, or Path to Exile, or Serum Visions did nothing to encourage.
Right.
Play at F&M. So
that's
like, having a good
point.
Promo didn't really change people's habits of going to F&M. And so they're looking for something to reward the player who's going to F&M more often than to reward the tournament player who's not really prioritizing F&M as their main Magic experience.
That's like also next level thinking that's really important. And us as people who are part of this community, you know, we talk about this, but a lot of people... EV gets brought up a lot. What they really think about when they think about Magic is, how can this game serve me? I lose money playing this because buying packs and drafting, you know, you don't break even. Like, everybody knows this is a hobby. This is a thing we all like to do as a game. So unless you are somebody who is legitimately like one of the top 1% in the world, or you're somebody who is actually just trying to grind value in trading, probably you're going to own cards and you're going to lose money. That's like what happens to all of us. So with that being said, I think that there's this sense that people have of like, they are owed something. They're owed something by the people who are organizing these tournaments and the promos they're winning and all these things, right? Like the corporation's always out to get them, and they're not getting their value back. And it's really important to remember that, like, this promo that you're getting on a Friday night, that is Wizards encouraging you to go to the local store and be a part of the community. That's the reason they're incentivizing you. If they didn't care if you were going, they wouldn't print these things and give them
right.
away.
Plus, the thing to pay attention to is, everyone, tokens are like, yes, you don't play with the ones you have, but I know for sure you have your Ben Bateman tokens.
The vampire tokens?
The vampire tokens from
that's like a troll
the Fatal
move.
Tokens.
It's a troll move.
Totally. But like people have tokens that they care about and they right. play decks that are relevant. I have the Whitney Merritt, my fiance was on yeah. tap decking as well and played Becca, and I have the Becca Spear tokens with me because the first Lingering Souls is in every deck I play, and B, yep. she's the token for that. I have the Jason Germ token, which is mine, that like is only useful with Stoneforge Mystic legal, so let's make that happen.
I have
the Batter School Germ token.
I have my Merit Lage token.
Right, well, yeah, and so, like, you have these tokens that matter, and the ones that are special matter. Like, I have the foil angel token, the half double-sided right. foil demon token that is awesome for Geist, because he has a foil angel, and it's all foil deck. So, like, if there's a, like, the zombie tokens, the 2-2 ones, were really, really, really cool, and I collected, like, as many as I could get my hands on. So, like, coming out with cool foil tokens, and something to also remember is, currently that zombie token is $4 to $5.
Right.
And zombies are a really popular token or archetype, so that's going to be popular. But if you look at FNM promos,
yep.
how many cards would be printed from that, and you look at how many pre-release packs are opened, pre-release right. packs blow that out of the water.
Sure.
So from a value perspective, if you're looking for EV, I would say there's about 30 tokens that they could print without coming out with new token card ideas that they can print over the next. And if they're only doing 4 tokens a year, even if they're doing 12, that's 3 years worth of tokens.
Yeah.
But if they're doing only 4 a year, that's almost 10 years worth of available tokens that they could print that would be exciting every
Squirrel
3 months.
Squirrel tokens.
Like that, and that's going crazy. Like Pegasus tokens from back in the day. But like if you like Goblin, Spirit, Elf, Merfolk, Demon, like...
Right.
Yes, and it's double-sided, so have it. So it's really, but then most often my guess is that they'll be like Elf Pirate will be like the two, or Merfolk Pirate will be the two coming in the new set. So there'll
sure.
be Merfolk on one side, Pirate. So there'll be like one classic exciting one. So for instance, the Thopter Servo token double-sided promo from earlier this year,
right.
Thopter is relevant forever. There are 1,000 cards that make 1/1 Thopters.
Right.
There's not that many. There's only Servos are only from the most recent set. So you have both sides. And I think that's something they'll work on is like we'll get the legendary monkey token or we'll get the.
Oh, yeah. Is that the legendary from Kari Zev?
Yeah.
Right?
Kari Zev. Like that's the stuff we're going to be getting. Like there's no way they wouldn't have printed that as a promo if that was what was going on. So that's like that's cool and exciting. And I think. In general, these will be, from an EV perspective, on average worth more than the average FNM promo was. You're not going to have the Fatal Push ones, but people are like, yeah, but I'm going to play Fatal Push forever. But you're going to play Fatal Push forever no matter what. Like the fact that you got that Fatal Push promo isn't going to make you play that card more often.
And you're going to just, yeah, you're going to get the card anyway. So it doesn't.
So like.
They know that you're going to get that card. They're like, they're not worried
right.
about you paying for Fatal Push.
And people are like, well, why couldn't they just pick better cards? Well, one of the reasons beyond just the difficulty of predicting the future for Standard is the point of Magic is to make people buy packs. And if they
the point of Magic for Wizards.
For
is
Wizards.
To sell
yeah, yeah, yeah. As a company is to sell product. And by printing Chase uncommons or rares as FNM promos makes it so you're less likely to buy packs.
Right.
And you want Wizards to sell packs because otherwise that's why they can make this game. That's why they can do as much as they do. They're the largest game development, tabletop gaming development company probably in the world.
Yes, they have to make money otherwise yeah. the game doesn't expand.
The reason they have this team, the reason they're able to come out with a product every month, like this all happens because they sell
yeah.
a lot of packs. And so that's a good thing. And the other thing, you know, they released a follow-up, and I can kind of just skim through and read a little bit of it. One thing that they pointed out is that in earlier this year, Elaine Chase wrote an article in February kind of talking about what their directions are, and that's what a lot of these changes are in regards to. And these are the quotes. With that in mind, 2017 is going to be a year of trying new things for in-store play and a year of innovating, of experimenting, and of pushing the envelope for in-store offerings. And our goal this year is to refine and reimagine our in-store play programs to create greater accessibility and appeal for players of all skill levels. So, like, this year specifically for them is let's try stuff. Let's try Standard Showdown, which we will get back to because there's a really sweet announcement. From yesterday's Standard Showdown. Let's do the Magic Championship. Let's change game day, even though we've had it for a while. Let's change what our in-store programs are going to look like to make it more appealing to more players. And I think this does that. And I'm more excited to get a 1-1 Spirit double-sided token that's a 1-1 Sapperling on the other side or whatever than I ever was to get most FNM promos.
Curse of the Bloody Tome.
Yeah.
What wonderful. The hell is that card called? I have like three of them.
I don't know. I don't play
it. It was a bad card. It was a bad mill card. I'll tell you exactly what it was called now that you're asking. It was called Curse of the Bloody Tome. I was dead right.
Yeah, you're good. Cost you got three. It.
And there was a promo of it. It was a friggin' what a bad card.
So the next announcement that they made is Standard Showdown, which I talked about. They're making a small change, and they realized that people really like promo lands. And that's the other thing people mentioned. Why don't we just get promo lands? And it's because they're doing it on Standard Showdown. And that's the other thing to kind of bring up. This announcement announced like two extra ways of getting promos that previously kind of didn't exist. And so on top of FNM no longer giving promos, but giving these cool token promos instead,
right,
we're still going to get additional promos. So Standard Showdown is now offering sweet lands. And the first one are the old Rebecca Guy lands. Guai? She's an artist.
Do you know what set they're from so I can look at the art?
No, but I can show you the art right now.
Rebecca Guai.
Does it say... Those lands will...
Were they full art or something, or are they just awesome art?
They're just awesome art. They're, like, famous. So, like, they just have never been foil.
A lot like... These look like they're, like, Lorwyn lands, maybe.
No, they're definitely not. They've never been foil. So, this is before foil lands. This is, like, Tempest or before.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay. Maybe Tempest. That wouldn't surprise me.
I would look up what that is while we talk about it. Cool. These are sweet, and I'm really excited to get cool land promos in general. Like, I remember when Ravnica came out with that Plains.
Right.
I was always hoping they would finish that cycle. It was, like, weirdly not popular, I guess, so they didn't do a swap at the next... Like, I would have loved, like, Innistrad swaps to go with my Ravnica Plains, to go with Zendikar Forests, to go with... I don't know, it was a red plane we've been to.
Kaladesh. That's a red plane.
Kind of. Yeah, there was a revolt. Yeah, red Kaladesh. And oh, no, Tarkir is definitely red-based. Hmm. Like, red mountain, Tarkir Mountains. And what's the last color?
Tarkir Plains?
Islands.
Plains. You and I are doing this thing where you're looking at the computer screen and I'm looking at my phone and we're, like, talking at each other while not listening.
It's fun.
I hope you guys are enjoying this.
So, yeah, so that's kind of what's happening there. And then there's a Magic Open House that they're announced. At the Magic Open House, you'll be able to take home full art promos from the upcoming set Exelon. That means you'll get Exelon cards a week prior to pre-release. So there's an additional day where you can receive promos. That's the other thing. Magic Open House is this new thing where you'll be able to receive full foil, full art promo cards from the upcoming set.
Magic Open House.
Yeah, that happens. So September 16th to 17th is the week prior to the pre-release. So remember that, you know, the week where spoilers have come out, but the pre-release is a week later?
Yeah.
That weekend before that is the Magic Open House, which is meant to be like a players come to the store, other players come to teach new players, kind of encourages everyone to kind of hang out and have a good time. There's now a foil full art promo that will come with that day.
Is that because... Oh, are they Commander lands? Is that what it is? Rebecca Guai? Did she do Commander lands and they weren't in foil because they were in one of the Commander sets?
No, I believe these are old.
Okay. Well, so that week, though, that has existed for a long time in Magic Open House where... You show up to the store and it's like, oh, guys, we're doing the final draft. It's going to be the last draft of this old set that we've been playing for like a month and a half, 2 months. No one really wants to draft it anymore. And it's just this kind of dead weekend, right? That's now going to be Magic Open House. So
yes.
You basically now are going to show up. And the idea is like, let's get excited for the new set. Let's promote it. If you're like a new player who's wandering into the store for the first time and you happen to come on Magic Open House weekend, it's like, hey, get prepped, get ready. You've got a whole new thing coming. It starts next weekend. I get that. And they're going to give you a free card to get you excited. So, yeah, I think that's a good idea. I think it's a good idea to kind of what are they called? The dog days of summer.
I mean, I guess they were only in Commander 2016. Yeah. Okay. You're right.
Yeah. So that like that period of time, though, that definitely happens. It's like in sports, they call it the dog days of summer. It's like the same kind of idea. It's like a very, very boring moment.
Sure.
And so you replace that with this Magic Open House. I think that's a good idea.
And kind of the point of it is, because pre-releases should be the first tournament new players go to. That's
right.
Kind of how it's the best environment for a new player to go to because it's not as spiky. People are like, whatever. They'll let you take back mistakes. And this allows you to kind of do a 1-2 punch with the pre-release of the first time, like bringing him to the store, teaching him how to play, getting him a little into it, and then bring him into the final, the big tournament the next week.
Right.
And last announcement, but not least, but maybe least, is a league. So there's a league format. They've been starting to do this. So basically, you start with three boosters and a 30. Three boosters where it you're doing a... You start the beginning of the process, three boosters, and then every week you kind of add to it. And so you continue to improve on the promo and improve on your deck as the thing goes on. It's kind of like a sealed event that your deck gets better and better. They're adding a promo card to that just for participating.
Sick.
So people are complaining that they're getting rid of promo cards, but in the same announcement, there's like four places that they're adding promos.
Yeah.
So like their game day's promos are changing, but they're still like they're just moving basically game day a month earlier.
Well, yeah.
For all intents and purposes.
And so it's like important to note here, the only promos that we're losing were not promos that it was like a sick promo every week. It was like kind of occasionally a good promo. So it just sounds like they're spreading out the opportunity to for these promos to be better in general and just like harder to get places.
Look, there's this league promo, which has a great potential of being a sweet card. There's Magic Open House promo that's full art now. There's the land promos and standard showdown packs, which is a thing that's happening, you know, every weekends. And there's the token promo.
I also have to think to some degree that there's
four different versions of the FNM promo now.
I also have to think to some degree this is a little bit of a response to Masterpieces. Just like the general, I'm sure the general conversation over the last 6 months has just been like, all right, guys, we flooded the market a little bit with excitement for cards that we haven't seen promos, like we haven't seen foils of, and like new art, and like that was cool, but like I think players are a little burnt out, so let's shake things up and let's maybe.
Maybe. I mean, like the problem with that is, well, A, I'm pretty firm now that I think they should have always just done 5 to 10 masterpieces per set.
Yeah.
Like going for that full 50 was like so extreme and like burnt them out really quickly versus only doing 5 to 10, which would have made it consistently exciting.
Why do people hate invocations so much? People hate invocations.
Because you can't read the cards. You can't read the names.
It's true. It's really hard to read.
It, like, the font is the biggest mistake on those cards.
Yeah.
And there's, like, there's not a consistent theme, and people like to have themes. Like, imagine if they just did 5 sorceries.
Right.
Or five sorceries. What would have been cool is 5 sorceries, 5 to 10 sorceries, 5 new ones, and maybe 2 old ones. Or 2 new ones and 5 old ones from Amonkhet. And then the second set was 5 instants. Because it's Hour of Devastation and Nicol Bolas shows up. Like, that would have been a sweet thing to do, but because they had to stick to this, like, we need 50 cards, they, like, ran out of space.
Was there 50 expeditions?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, between both sets.
I didn't even realize that.
Yep.
That's crazy.
Maybe more. You know, I think there's 54.
Wild.
Because there's all 10 Fetch and Shocks. That's 20. There's all 5 Czech land, or Tango lands. There's all of the, like, in addition to that, so that's 30 if you include then all the, like, the Ghost Quarter Wasteland cards. There's
just all the weird ones.
There's like all the filter lands.
Yeah, there's like Horizon, 40. There's a Horizon Canopy.
And then there's a bunch of weird ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say there's about 54. Yeah, there's 54.
Interesting.
Yep.
Interesting.
So that's kind of what the announcements were. And the internet kind of freaked out and it made Wizards have to respond the next day in the daily update. That's kind of what I was reading from, is where they're like, here's the deal. We're trying new things. Don't worry. But if you look at their announcement, I don't know. From my perspective, they've added 4 new promo locations. Plus, they're still giving a sweet token that I think is probably going to have a higher value more often than not.
Right, right.
Sweet. Yeah. So we're at 45 minutes.
Yep.
Do you want to deck tech?
I do.
Okay.
Because this is exciting, because I'm getting close, guys. So Comic-Con's this weekend, and the following weekend, I'm planning on playing 2 PPTQs back-to-back. I'm planning on a Saturday and a Sunday. Obviously, you know, I have a girlfriend. She is important to me, and we will see what happens. Because that tends to be every time I intend.
Not that she's not important, but that you have a girlfriend.
Every time I
she's
intend,
very important to you, your fake girlfriend.
Every time I intend to play Magic for like a full 2 days, I feel like that doesn't happen. But I'm going to try my damnedest, because I really, really would like to do this, and I stole all of the expensive cards out of Alex's deck so that I could build Superior Burning Coco, and I've just been holding on to them since GP Vegas. And I need to use them for a tournament so that I can get all of the value out of stealing Alex's expensive cards. So let's talk about Superior Burning Cocoa. Let's talk about this deck. I don't have the actual paper deck in front of me. What I have is the decked app file that I was messing around with in wherever we just were, Vegas. And it's probably off by a card or two is what it looks like here, but it's not too far from it, and I can explain to you guys what's going on with it. So this is a deck that I feel like you and I first started talking about 2 years ago. Longer, maybe. And we've been doing this podcast for like 2.5 years.
You started it on the podcast?
Yeah.
So it was definitely since this podcast has existed, but it was in the first year.
So it's been a couple years.
We are tailing into our end of our third year, so I would say 100 episodes ago.
Yeah, it's a long time ago. Now, if you guys listen to the show and have listened to the show, then you know this deck. You like know it well. It's been talked about. I would say this is probably the flagship deck of this show. Probably we've talked about it the most, right? Is there any other deck that's ever been talked about as much as this? With one of ours, I mean.
No, I think you're right. Yeah, because we generally don't talk about whatever blue-white X deck I'm messing around with.
And we mess around with decks. It's just this deck has kept the same name, and it's more distinctive because it's such a weird deck.
I'll agree with that.
Yeah, it died for a long time, but it's back now. So
yeah, I think if it hadn't come back, there were maybe other decks that could achieve that status, but because you brought it back.
Yeah, and it's sweet now. I've played some games with it. I've played a lot of games with it recently, and I've been pretty impressed with it. So
explain to me what the gist of the main game plan is for people that aren't inundated with haven't listened to every single episode of Masters of Modern.
Okay, so I will start with probably the definitive card in the deck, which is Mirror Superior, a card you guys know that I've talked about in here a lot. And this is an artifact creature 5/6 that costs 2 and states you can only cast Mirror Superior if you cast it using mana generated from a creature. It's a very, very particular restriction because it costs 2 rather than 1, so your general like elf type of thing is not going to cast a Superior, which means you have to get really creative and clever. So to cast Superior, the idea was, what are all of the ways that I can try to cheat this guy into play? And the clever way is to play Burning Tree Emissary. So you play a Burning Tree Emissary on turn 2, it generates 2 mana, and that immediately casts Mirror Superior. That's wonky, and if that was the only way this deck worked, it wouldn't work. But
it's not wonky, it's just...
It's powerful, but it's also...
It's a two-card combo.
And it's also a turn 2 two-card combo, which means a Thoughtseize ruins your day. And it happens a lot when you play this deck. You'll definitely find... But it's not as devastating as you would think, and I'll explain to you guys why. So this deck, as well as playing 4 Burning Tree Emissary, also plays 4 Aether Vial. A turn 1 Aether Vial is really good in this deck. It's good in every deck it's in, but...
Sure, but your whole deck is a bunch of 2-drops, right? So
pretty much the whole deck is 2-drops, right. You're playing like 26, 27 creatures and like 22, 23 are 2-drops.
Okay.
So you're playing 4 Aether Vial, and finally the last way to get Mirror Superior into play is you're playing 4 Collected Company.
Four of major way.
Yes. Yeah. So you have basically 12 ways to consistently get a Mirror Superior in play, either from your deck or from your hand. And Collected Company, as we all know, is a very powerful card. So Superior, obviously, another great usual 5/6 is Tarmogoyf. So you're playing 4 Goyf and 4 Superior.
Sure.
That's the meat and potatoes of the deck. It's like that's your most powerful 8 creatures, usually. You don't play any 1-drops in the entire deck.
Other than
Vials and I guess a few pieces of removal. Okay. I think at the current list is playing like 3 path in the main deck probably.
Okay.
So that's like you don't interact very much because between your vials and your collected companies, you need to have a lot of company targets.
Sure.
So here's where you get interesting. I will run through some of the other creatures in the deck. You play 3 Dark Confidant. Aside from your collected companies, the deck everything costs 2 and 3. So flipping cards over with Confidant is fine for you. Occasionally you hit a company, but really you usually don't. You play 2 copies of Fauna Shaman, which is definitely an underrated card and very good in this deck.
Totally. Fauna Shaman is one of the more underrated cards in Modern.
Yeah, and it's one of the defining cards in this deck because, as you can hear, guys, you're playing Aether Vials, Burning Tree Emissaries, cards that you probably don't want multiples of.
Well, you can't discard Aether Vial to Burning...
True. Yeah. You can discard it to Pack Rat, which there's also one of in here.
Yep.
But you sometimes want to discard your extra copies of Burning Tree Emissary. If maybe there is like a graveyard hate thing going on and you have like a Tarmogoyf in hand, you can discard your Tarmogoyf to go search out another Mirror Superior. If you have an Aether Vial in play, there's a lot of play that's very interesting. And Fauna Shaman is definitely one of your go long win the game cards. So 2 Fauna Shaman, play a single copy of Pack Rat. one of my favorites in the whole deck. One thing that a lot of people have never realized is that turn one Aether Vial into turn three, end of turn, discard, or a flash in Pack Rat, and then discard a card to Pack Rat the same turn is like a bananas play. It's like insanely good and very hard for a lot of decks to beat.
Sure.
One of the, Pack Rat was a standard powerhouse, and it's been on the fringe of a lot of people's minds in Modern. People have tried to brew with this card, but the problem is if you play it on turn two, they just kill it. Your ability to flash it in and then respond to removal with open mana is just crazy. Like, it's really hard to beat a Pack Rat.
Yeah.
So you play two copies of Scavenging Ooze, one Selfless Spirit, one Spellskite, one Tidehollow Sculler, two Renegade Rallier, which is another
Wait, before you get past Tidehollow Sculler, like, that's another crazy good with Aether Vial.
Oh, yeah.
And something to also bring up is if you have a Fauna Shaman and if, like, on turn three you were able to have Fauna Shaman and Aether Vial online, you basically can cast for one mana and discarding a creature card any of these creatures at instant speed to service whatever your needs are. Did they Lightning Bolt? Oh, well, go get Selfless Spirit, flash it in, and sacrifice it to give your Fauna Shaman indestructible so their Lightning Bolt
or
didn't work.
Or go get your Spellskite.
Or get your Spellskite the second up. Or play, yeah. So there's
Scholar
like...
Sculler them during draw step and get your own Vendilion click. Yeah, there's a lot of really cool plays. Two Renegade Rallier, which is that was one of the late adds to this deck. When I rebuilt it, that was one of the most important cards printed. Your ability to go all in early on your Burning Tree Emissary into Mir Superior plan means that, like, very often what people will do is they'll thought seize your Burning Tree Emissary out of your hand because they'll be like, haha, I'll leave you with your Mir Superior and you can't cast. And then on turn three, you're like, okay, I'll crack a fetch land, play Renegade Rallier, I'll get the Burning Tree Emissary back into play, and I'll cast my Mir Superior for free. Like, let me just put 10 power on the play on turn three and also not care about your thought seize at all. It's really good. Like, Renegade Rallier turned out to be one of the all-stars of this deck. And finally, my favorite add to the deck, a single copy of Ronus, the Indomitable. This turned out to be the all-star card in all of my recent games with this deck.
Yeah, card seems insane.
It's insane. I mentioned two Scavenging Ooze. So your Oozes are very often going to have four power, like, just pretty easily, pretty quickly. That's not, like, a hard thing to achieve.
Right.
Your Tarmogoyfs are just about always going to have four power. And your Mir Superiors are always going to have four power, which means your Ronus is usually going to be a creature. It's usually going to be a three mana indestructible 5/5.
Well, and you have so many X2s or 2Xs that a Ronus can just make one of them beefy to also be able to attack.
Yeah, that's the other thing is that mid to late game, if people don't know what's going on and you're setting up for it, you can tick your Vial up to three, which you usually don't do. You usually leave your Vial on two. You can tick your Vial to three and mid combat. Fauna Shaman for a Ronus to Vial it into play. Like, this has happened. It sounds like crazy magical Crispin land, but, like, if you're on turn 9 or 10 and you're grindy, that's a thing you can do mid-combat that people don't see coming, and you just win the game with, like, a Vialed in combat trick.
Yeah, I think in general, Amakat is going to go down. Like, people were really down on its power level, but between... Like, I think it's going to go down as a set that has more power than people have given it credit for. And part of that, for me, is, like... A, we talked about already, invocations were really unpopular, so, like, those aren't going to hold as much of the value as people would have hoped. And then on top of that, you have cards like Ronus. You have Gideon of the Trials is seeing a ton of play in Modern. Every deck I see is playing every white deck is playing two to three of it. You have the Cycle Lands. Those will forever be cards playable in Modern. Like, this is a set that has, not to mention stuff like Dread Wanderer, like all these, like, random Soul Scar Mage, like all these weird smaller cards that are just good, like, it possibly in the future if the right cards are printed. But you have a decent amount of power level in this set. Harsh Mentor.
I like Harsh Mentor. So let me talk a little bit about the end of this list. So 4 Vial, 3 Path, 1 Abrupt Decay, 4 Collected Company, and currently, and it has played this for a long time, this is the number one card when people look through the stack. They're always like, really? You play a copy of Profane Command?
I thought you cut Profane.
I haven't done the update, and I'll explain what we're talking about in just a second. Profane Command has been, like, a favorite of mine in this deck for a long time. And the biggest reason is that for 4 mana, you will very often get back a Mir Superior, give 2 creatures fear at the same time, and swing through for what should be almost lethal and sets up for lethal the next turn. The fear ability is the thing that makes it the best, because you're in a world of, like, Abzan and Jund decks where it's just like your big creature versus my big creature, breaking the board stall and getting through, even if it's just 4 mana, let me give 2 creatures fear and also drain you for 2, can just usually end the game. But I'm thinking more and more, I'm going to cut Profane Command. I'm going to add a single Stomping Ground to this deck, and I'm going to just I'm just going to change it into a Claim to Fame. Because I think Claim to Fame gets back Mirror Superior better anyway for one black. It just seems a lot stronger than four to get it back. And the haste side of it.
And everything else in your deck, other than Ronus.
Yeah.
And
it just,
Renegade Rallier, you have two cards in the entire deck that it can't get back in the main deck.
Right. Just generally seems pretty good.
Yeah.
So, also, it makes the Fauna Shaman plan even better because you have a one black way to, like, for one green discarding a card and then both sides of Claim Fame, you are literally doing the same thing Profane Command is doing cost-wise. You're just getting more out of it. You're searching for whatever creature you wanted in your hand. You're discarding some creature in your hand. You're not losing value on it. And then for three mana, you're putting that creature directly into play and giving it haste.
Sure.
So, seems pretty good.
And we've talked about this before, and we'll go into what your sideboard is for this deck. But you're going to be playing... You're not... sacrificing the Profane Command goes into your sideboard because it still has the strengths you mentioned in specific matchups.
Yeah,
but the fact that Claim to Fame, like the red half, isn't that necessary. Like it's not the important half. And beyond just the Stomping Ground, all four Burning Tree Emissaries can just cast it. So late game, if you just top deck a Burning Tree Emissary and you're in a top decking mode, but you have Claim to Fame in your graveyard at this point, you can just use that Claim to Fame to play it as a 4/2 haste. Lightning Elemental for all intents and purposes.
Yeah, yeah, it's definitely good.
Intents and purposes.
Yeah, yeah. I think so that's kind of the gist of the main deck. That's what you're doing for the most part. As you get into the sideboard, so it does, the deck plays 21 land. The mana base is a little wonky. It's probably one of the things that's the most difficult to figure out because you need green on turn 2. So it's a green based deck. If you're getting rid of Profane Command from the main deck, it gets a little easier. You don't need to be able to hit double black.
So on that note, if you need green on turn 2, is it maybe better to play not a Stomping Ground, but to play like a red-white land, like one of your other lands that can't currently cast Burning Tree Emissary on turn 2, making it a X-red so that it can also be kind of a fake green land for you in the deck?
Ish. I mean, the lands that I have written down here, I feel like this mana base that I have on my phone is incorrect. It doesn't look as familiar as I'm used to. But you have to play a certain number of fetches and shocks, obviously, because you have to be able to turn on Renegade Rallier. So I think you're playing at least 6, if not 8 fetches. You're playing probably 5 to 6 shocks. And then the rest of the deck is like, there's a single Ghost Quarter just because you need to have it. Horizon Canopy is a card that this deck plays 2 of.
Okay.
It just, because of the Aether Vial, like, collected company, you just want more gas than them. You don't care about...
Lands matter less than gas.
Yeah, you don't really need more than 3 or 4 lands in this deck just about ever. So, I mean, sometimes it's nice if you're trying to like activate a Ronus or a Pack Rat, but for the most part, this deck wants basically 4 to 3 lands on the table. So having the 2 Horizon Canopies just turns your lands into gas, which is nice. You're playing like a single Wooded Bastion.
Plus, it's another option for Renegade Rally or late game. On turn 5, you can...
Yes, yeah. Exactly. I'm playing like a Blooming Marsh and a Razor Verge Thicket. There's like fast lands for early game. So that's kind of what's going on there. As far as the sideboard goes, I've kicked around a lot of different versions of this sideboard. It's super meta-dependent. I mean, what you have to remember is basically whatever the meta you're in, 2-mana creatures are your premium. That's like where you want to be focusing. And the one super hard thing to figure out with this deck is that when you're customizing your sideboard... You don't have the ability to drop creatures for spells because it makes your collected companies so bad.
Sure.
So you have to make sure if you're swapping in creatures, you're keeping the count of 2 drops versus 3 drops relatively consistent, and that you're not just like going up on spells and down on creatures.
I do think we talked about this before about if you're replacing Profane to Command with Claim to Fame, because I believe you had 1 Profane in the side and 1 in the main. Putting 2 in the side with the intent to get rid of the Claim to Fame and maybe 1 collected company in sideboard matchups, or maybe not collected company but another spell, because in those grindier mid-range matchups that card seems so powerful.
Yeah.
And in, you know, against some other decks it's just pretty decent too because it drains them. Late game control decks are just like any game that goes late, the more Profane Command gets better every turn you go farther down the line,
right?
And then you also have a bunch of 3 drops in the sideboard, so your Claim to Fame gets much worse.
Yeah,
do Renegade Ralliers to a certain extent, because you're not able to get your 3 drops back.
Yeah, definitely. So in the Death Shadow matchup, you have the current list I'm playing has five cards you bring in, and one of them is very questionable based on the mana base. It probably isn't a real card, but two Mirran Crusaders. The questionable one is Devout Lightcaster, which I think is sweet, and it's obviously very good with like Vile and very good with Collected Company, but not good with your mana base because it's almost impossible to cast white.
Sure.
Lingering Souls, you're playing a one of, and then I believe the fourth path is in the sideboard. So that's the five cards I would bring in against Grixis Shadow. What's nice is your creatures match up well against Anglers and Tassigers. You don't really care about those creatures. Like, your creatures are bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Death Shadow is what it is. Like, pathing it is good for you. Abrupt Decaying it is good for you.
Sure.
Do
you bring in... Would you now replace the Claim to Fame with the Profane Command in that matchup?
No. Okay. I don't think so. I think because their life total is so low, the haste is really important.
Well, but you can drain them with Profane Command.
For, like, two or three. But, like...
Sure.
And sometimes they'll get down that low, but very often, like, top decking a Claim to Fame.
And fear isn't that good because every creature they have is black.
Yes. Like, Claim to Fame, it feels like in a lot of cases is just going to be better. Like, okay. They're just not going to see it coming, and you're going to top deck Claim to Fame and just, like, swing for whatever, like, seven out of your graveyard or something.
Sure.
So. Yeah. I mean, Profane Command is burn, which is good, but I think probably Claim to Fame is better. But Mirran Crusader is great against them. Other matchups, you know, I believe the sideboard that I'm currently playing has one Kataki. Obviously, your Vials get a little worse with Kataki, but you don't really care that much. If you can resolve Kataki against Affinity, they just lose.
Yeah, both Affinity and Lantern Control both, like, are just like, how do I beat that?
Remember, too, that the Fauna Shamans make it so that your sideboard plan of bringing in, like, one-ofs and two-ofs, you're much, much more likely to get those cards than you'd think.
Do you have, like, an additional Fauna Shaman in your sideboard just to, like, up your count there, or is it just...
No, two's good. Okay. Two's good. I don't think you need more than two. What else is in the sideboard? You know, like I said, one Lingering Souls. I think you can probably go more Lingering Souls, even though they're not creatures. Just the card is so good against so many decks.
Plus, you have stuff like Pack Rat in your deck already, so
there's another little
bit of value.
Another way to go wide. You know, I believe the sideboard I'm currently playing has three Thoughtseize, just because in the big deck matchups, like when you're playing against like a Titan Shift or something like that, you just want to have a way to get the spells out of their hand.
Sure. Not to mention, like, against Storm, your deck needs some type of game.
Yeah.
And though you can play, there's the good creep. There's like a Aethersworn Canidist and stuff like that would probably be really good.
Yeah. So that's the thing, is you can customize your sideboard in this deck
for the metagame.
I'm definitely going to be customizing it. You know, I haven't gotten to play any games yet against Eldrazi Tron, but I was talking to you about this the other day. I think probably it matches up pretty well. Their creatures are a little bit smaller than your creatures in general.
You have a 5/6. They have 5/5s and 4/4s.
Yeah, you're pretty fast if you come out correctly. Their mana base and Planeswalker half is more problematic for you, and if they can get up there, this deck doesn't deal with Planeswalkers well. You don't have any haste aside from Vile. I mean, that is one thing to keep in mind, though, guys, is, like, so Aether Vial is a card that is reserved in most people's minds for Merfolk in Modern. That's a card that, like, that's where people think of it. This plays a little more like Death and Taxes plays Vial, where somebody tries to Inquisition you, and you flash in Musipirion in response. Somebody, you know, you can hit a turn early Collected Company off of a vialing in a Burning Tree Emissary early. That's like something that I've done in this deck a lot of times. You keep a one lander with a Vial in this deck most of the time, because that's a Vial on turn one is almost the most valuable thing this deck can have. Because of the four Burning Tree Emissaries, it means you're very likely to hit a second land by the time you'd want to cast the Collected Company anyway. Like, you'll have two lands and a Burning Tree Emissary and just, like, resolve company.
Also, I think a card you might want to consider maybe as a one of in your sideboard is Phyrexian Revoker.
It's been in there before.
Because just against, like, Karns.
Yeah.
Where and there's a bunch of other stuff out there that it's going to just be generically good against randomly, like Gideon of the Trials.
Yeah.
Where it's, like, maybe just having, or Liliana of the Veil, just having a one of, like, Planeswalker creature removal spell is maybe worth it. And it's two mana, and it kind of does everything else your deck is doing.
It's been in there in the past. It's fine. It's, like, probably a reasonable one of to get with Fauna Shaman.
And because you can keep getting it back if they get rid of it, too. You have so many different ways to kind of deal with it. That's, as a one of, I'm saying, in the sideboard.
Yeah. So that's pretty much the deck, guys. There's some other sideboard cards that I don't have in front of me, but that's...
What's your worst matchup?
Oh, and Core Firewalkers. You play those. Worst matchup with this deck... Probably decks that are doing, like, fast, uninteractive, unfair things. Like, I would say Storm is probably a very bad matchup.
Sure.
Game two, you're fine against most people. I mean, I think probably game one, Affinity beats you. You're not really fast enough to match up against them.
Dredge? You have oozes in the main.
You play two oozes in the main deck. And they're fast, but like they're not that fast with stuff that's that big.
Right,
like,
you're beefier than they are.
Like, for instance, if you resolve turn two Burning Tree into Superion, and they get like a bunch of amalgams, that you probably are going to stabilize and hit like a Collected Company or a Tarmogoyf or something, one removal spell by like the fourth turn. Your stuff's big enough early enough to block them that I don't know that Dredge just walks all over you. If you get a slow start, Dredge can be bad for you. But because you have the oozes in the main deck, I think it's not as bad as you'd think.
Okay. Sweet.
So,
all right,
yeah.
So that's it for today's episode. We got deck tech, more of a deck update, news, tournament standings, a bunch of rambling in the beginning on random things. Make sure to check us out on Twitter. We are at the MMCast. I'm at Kess Wiley.
I'm at Ben Bateman Media.
Make sure to check us out on Facebook, the Facebook group. There's a page and a group. You can like both because the page exists and it's also important, but the group is where you're going to get really good. It's the official Masters of Modern Facebook group. You get a lot of good interaction there. It's definitely worth checking that out. If you are a Facebook user especially, it's a good place to kind of be a part of a community that is really into Modern, and everyone's really helpful. If you have a deck idea you want to try out, they'll give you kind of a tips and advice. Make sure to go to our Patreon. Check that out. We are doing a brew episode next week. Right now we're officially changing it. And if it doesn't say it there, we are officially changing it verbally here. So know that if you have any donation level on our Patreon page, above $1, you will be able to submit deck tech. So please go there, donate a dollar. It's not that much, and we appreciate your contributing here. And you get the submitted deck tech to be reviewed next week. And last but not least, if you're at Comic Con, make sure to hit us out. Follow us. You know, we'll be posting where we're at on Twitter pretty regularly. And it's always a blast, and we'd love to sling some spells or just hang out and talk and do Comic Con things.
Exactly.
All right, thanks guys for listening. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Thank you for your attention. See you later, alligator.